Roses are red, violets are blue, but you know that's not entirely true. Roses and violets come in several tones bright, and life is more than just black and white. Hey there, welcome to Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Early in America's new day, and happy to be with you each week, welcoming people who represent the arts, culture, and humanities of Western Wisconsin. This week, Tim Harmston's job is to make people laugh. Talk about a tough gig nowadays, but his spirit and confidence are up and running, and he's anticipating the live audience experience again. We have news from the Chippewa Valley Book Festival. Veteran volunteer Pam Gardo is here with some important dates to remember. Family stories are too precious to neglect or forget. Future generations deserve them, and writer Patty C. will help you document your family stories in a workshop coming next month. And let's begin right here. Like a neighbor checking in on another neighbor that we haven't heard from in a while, we've been talking with people leading the many West Wisconsin venues that host artistic and entertainment events. The Heide Center for the Arts, like a sentry posted on the ridge, watches over the city of Chippewa Falls and is doing its best to stay buoyant until the doors reopen. I called Executive Director Deb Johnson the other day for an update. Venues all over are bravely publishing season events, hoping that someday the clouds will part, the sun will shine, and the front doors will open again. You know, but right now, Deb, I have to admit that it's like we're all sitting at a stoplight and we just keep waiting for the light to turn. We're starting to honk our horns. Kind of feels like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we'll get some specifics in a minute, but tell me what board or artistic committee meetings have been like leading up to your 2021 brochure.
Just to paraphrase it, but it, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. We have to move forward with some ideas. We have provided kind of a sliding scale, like if we can get 10 people in here, this is what it'll look like. If we can get 50 people in here, we've had in place physical distancing and all the kinds of PPE and sanitization stations, everything in place forever. The numbers just haven't allowed for us to have live performances in here for a while. So we're making it scalable so we can do virtual 100% or any kind of in-between live virtual opportunities. We're having to be really creative in how we provide that. We've spent the past 20 years promoting live as some of the best things, and I think people still are craving. I know that they desperately want. We get calls like, is this anything happening up there? And, you know, we're getting creative that way. But, yeah, it's true. If we had a crystal ball, we would know when we're going to be able to open up to a certain level. But we do a plan A, plan B, plan C, and plan D. You know, if this we can get 25 people in here, here's what we're going to do, and here's how we will go forward.
And you have, as I alluded, a publication out. It's the 2021 Entertainment Package, the electronic PDF file that I received. Am I wrong that it is by no means anywhere near the capacity that you used to plan for? That just wouldn't make sense to overload and then not have it happen.
Correct. We were light in the beginning. You know, when we started doing this, the planning of the performances, we were still back in August, September, and obviously it was very optimistic. We scheduled those other ones that we know we would get a big, healthy auditorium full of people that we just can't accommodate right now, including Hot Off the Press, which is Jerry Way's annual musical comedy that we do, and we just have to cancel that one again.
Oh, wow.
The number of people just in the cast and crew goes beyond what the county health department recommends right now. So,
okay.
But yeah, you're right. We kept it small. We kept a lot of it more local, more adaptable. And we're filling in spots as we get on, but there's only so much you can keep pushing off to to the fall before you just don't have any more days left.
No kidding. Is it cancellation versus postponement? Is everything for the most part just being postponed?
For the most part, it's being postponed. With Hot Off the Press, it's a big musical. They couldn't even do the rehearsals. And at that point, with a community theater, it's not like a professional group of people. They're wonderful, but they can't do that on Zoom very easily. And some of the people that were involved didn't even have good internet connection. So I guess even that's postponed until 2022.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the 2021 entertainment package, and it begins in February and ends in December. And again, it's kind of lean compared to past years. Did you decide to just not even address things like, you know, workshops and Chill on the Hill and that kind of stuff?
The entertainment package, that is kind of the cornerstone. So we are still moving ahead with the idea that we will have Chill on the Hill,
okay,
starting to set those up, knowing that we may have to change depending on what's coming up. Chill on the Hill workshops, art workshops are still there. We just didn't get them in and completed because that is generally underneath the 15 people. So those are moving ahead. They're on our website, on Facebook, and we're still promoting those kind of things. But like you say, this one was really much smaller, a lot more conservative, a lot more fortunately pulled over from 2020.
Mm-hmm. What if, how many times have we said what if in the last, you know, 10 months? What if the clouds part and the sun starts shining and everything goes away and all the curtains are lifted? Would you say, all right, we can do a lot of stuff now. Let's fill this hole. Let's fill that hole. Or would you ride with what you have in place?
No, definitely. We have actually got plans in place. We've got some new things that are already booked. We've got some things in the next couple weeks, couple months that will be virtual. We definitely have a backload of performers just as much as venues want to be full again. And
mm-hmm.
That smell of popcorn and the sound of people getting excited about something. Performers, when we start opening up, the demand for live arts and culture is probably just going to be huge. I think it's going to be more of a slower rollout as people feel more comfortable, as
mm-hmm.
people start going out, distancing, mask wearing, and all that kind of stuff for the foreseeable future. But we can make accommodations for that. We're still booking. We're still optimistic, but we're having that conversation. We are going to plan for a beautiful future, and we will be prepared for whatever sliding scale situation we're in. The performers are just wonderful. They are just so anxious to get going again,
yeah,
that you know, they're willing to, and we're willing to do anything we can. I just had a conversation with Her Crooked Heart, the manager there,
mm-hmm.
and I said, I'm sorry, you know, but yeah, it looks like we should postpone that one. And I said, thank you for considering that. He goes, no, thank you. And I go, well, I'm glad that we're doing that because I feel like we're in this together, and I know that sounds canned. People have been saying that for a year.
Yeah.
He goes, no, we are in this together. We do have to understand that this is all of us pulling together, or none of us are going to mm-hmm. come out of this. I thought that was great.
People are hungry, no doubt. Imagine what it's going to be like when the buffet will be laid out again.
Yeah.
We're on the phone with Deb Johnson, Executive Director, Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Deb, how's the Heidi doing with the kinds of aid that has been out there? Have you been able to access some of that? And how has networking with other independent venues gone for you?
We have been very fortunate. The state of Wisconsin was absolutely brilliant in providing some grants to venues. One was a cultural organization grant, and the other one was the live entertainment and venues grant. We were able to qualify and get both those grants. That has really made a huge difference. We also have a very, very wonderful membership and support network because they came through with a couple months of funding as well. There's no way we're not going to keep this place open. The PPP program right in the beginning helped us keep staff on. We're not like a factory where, you know, okay, we shut down and now we're going to come back in and flip the lights on. We have to be planning well in advance to make sure we have the people and the performers and the contracts. So we could keep looking for the grants. Then the Save Our Stages program did a fantastic thing, and now we're looking at what the potential of that grant is. So it has been federal, state, and local support, which has been overwhelming and wonderful and heartwarming, and we are so thankful to everyone that helped us keep the doors open and the lights on.
Yeah, you kind of find out who your friends are.
Yes.
Would you agree that as we go forward and as weeks pass, the CVCA.net website is the best place to go? Is that where you're going to most generally, and maybe Facebook, update things?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I like the fact, too, that you've come up with those three R words inside the brochure: reinvention, resilience, and renaissance. That's cool.
We didn't want to come up with something like, oh my gosh, it's been a horrible year in so many ways. But there's also things I think that 2020 taught us, you know, what's really important. The arts are really important in our lives, that we really even more so need them and appreciate them, that we were forced to slow down a little bit and look around, and we're not coming from the ashes type of thing,
sure,
but we're coming forward, and the Renaissance is this thing that we've grown to appreciate. Maybe a little bit of live streaming might help people that are normally housebound. Can that be something that we continue for those people who can't physically be here but want to be? Positive things, if we look for it, that came out of 2020 that we have to not lose.
Thanks for your time and continued reinvention, resilience, and renaissance.
Thank you.
And we look forward to the day when we walk up the steps and get to work again. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Comedian Tim Harmston on the COVID effect on our funny bones. And the Chippewa Valley Book Festival reinvents itself again this year. Coming up on Spectrum West and next, writer Patty C. hosts a series on preserving family stories. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, committed to delivering an authentic and enjoyable automotive experience. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls and at marquardttoyota.com. Support also comes from UW Health Breast Center, providing second opinions for those diagnosed with breast cancer in person or on video via telehealth. More is at uwhealth.org/second opinion. Well, here's a story that'll help me make a point I seem to revisit within a favorite and possibly overused phrase repeated over the years. In order to get good things done, we need to get up off our best intentions and do them. You see, a guy guest hosted an annual CP telethon in my region of the state where I was growing up. He used that line. I guess it stuck with me. Well, thanks to UW Eau Claire and UWEC Barron County Continuing Education, writer Patty C. is hosting a way for us to act on our best intentions, a workshop to help us preserve our family stories, which, unless someone gets down to it, will not last forever. You're a native of Chippewa Falls, and even I know some stories about Chippewa Falls. Are you fortunate to have some family stories worthy of documentation? without being specific?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It's funny because I write this monthly column for the Leader Telegram. I try to look outward and try to look to Greater Lake Halley, Chippewa Valley, the world, but my family stories always, always creep into some aspect of my column. My column around Valentine's Day is going to be about handymen. So I was thinking about hired hands and how important it was to always have someone I could call for just little things and even bigger things. So I was writing about handymen who became friends, and I was sitting in my office, and I have my dad's vintage level, and it's a beautiful tool, and I wanted to display it. So I have it over the door frame of my office, and writing about these other handymen, and I looked at that level and realized the first handyman I loved, of course, was my dad. And so his stories and that level made it into the column too.
And you also find out whether your door frame is level.
That's right.
Is the bubble in the middle?
I love to look at it. The bubble is in the middle.
Oh, good.
In that level also, it's a metaphor for how I want to live my life, to be balanced and true and all that other good stuff.
Being an experienced human specimen as I am, I realize there is a real need for this kind of stuff because of the frustration one can have allowing legacy stories to pass away with people. That possibility is very real.
It is indeed, yep. So as part of this workshop, we'll have four classes, and one of the things that I'm going to focus on is the different ways that you can capture those family legacy stories. So absolutely, you can write them down, you can record, and we're going to focus on memory and research. I think about research as sort of fact-checking, so public records or even interviewing living relatives or doing research on what the world was like then. So you have your family story, but then how does your family story fit into the greater historic narrative?
Patty, what if someone believes there just aren't many stories within their family? Will a little digging turn up some gold?
Absolutely. From just maybe Googling some ancestors just to see what might come up, particularly in newspaper databases, looking at census records. I think everybody's got a family story. And even starting with some, I guess, primary sources, looking through old recipe books. I know my own recipe books that I got from my mom, she would write notes about what each of us liked, and she would handwrite her own recipes. Even looking through old photographs, most of us have old photo albums, actually hold-in-your-hand albums, and that can trigger memories and stories. So I think everybody's got it, and everybody's history is ready to be mined, I think.
On the phone with Patty C. She's a writer and an educator putting out a workshop called Preserving Family Stories. It's a four-part deal coming in February. It's going to happen Wednesday evenings via Zoom from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Aspects of this workshop are learn how to identify memories, then explore ways to tell stories, and then practice writing through some guided assignments. And I want to make sure people understand I'm not diminishing what you and others who write professionally and teach the art do. But, I mean, literally anybody can write the verb, write. All it takes is to sit down and do it. But how one writes and how to make the most of what's sailing down from your head to your hands is something one can learn.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to focus on memory and research, but then how do you tell the story? So using your own imagination to edit and arrange, and do you start from the beginning and tell till the end? Do you start right smack dab in that story and then right in the middle and then go back and then go forwards? The stories, first of all, have to be put on paper or put on computer. Then I think we can arrange in creative ways to maybe tell the story in the best format.
I don't want to position Reader's Digest as a retro publication, because I would suggest even to my kids and grandkids that they pick up Reader's Digest and even subscribe to it. But in the current edition of Reader's Digest, there is an article called The Truth About Memory. And the subhead is, Your Brain Doesn't Work Like a Tape Recorder. Sometimes that's a good thing. How does memory work? That question is asked in the article. And here's how they describe it. It works something like an old man sitting by a campfire somewhere deep in your brain. He means well and wants to help, but he doesn't show you your past like some wizard with a time portal. The best he can do is tell you stories. And like all good storytellers, he edits for impact, efficiency, functionality, and clarity. Sometimes he may even embellish the tale by adding a bit of flavor. Accuracy be damned. Or he might leave out a few things to spare you some pain or some shame. He also makes honest mistakes in the retelling. The first and most important lesson is that human memory is not reliable. So, I mean, basically what I just recited and contentions that one shouldn't and maybe can't depend on one's memory is why one should preserve family stories and do it early.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't necessarily adhere to the fact that your memory has to be the true story. I'll give you the example of, you know, being one of eight. We remember different things. We all were there, but our take on it is much, much different. And I think that goes back to the passage you read, what we include, what we leave out. I don't think a family story necessarily has to be quote-unquote fact-checked. You know, if that's what you remember and that's what you take from the experience, then that's the truth, I would say.
Patty, we are so busy and time flies so quickly, and actually one should think of it as the window for doing this is open for a shorter time than we know. So we have to make time for something like this. That's probably something you're going to suggest to people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A lot of writing teachers suggest different things. I was never a person who would journal daily, though once we went to the Safer at Home lockdown last March, I thought, oh, this could only last a month or so. I started a COVID journal, so now we're coming up on almost a year, and I challenged myself every day to write something about something that happened. Sometimes it was just what I made for supper, because nothing was particularly interesting. I didn't leave the house.
Sure.
So I do think that, yes, you have to make the time, you have to make the space. Now is as good a time as any, it seems to me, to sit down. You know, once you start to write, you don't know where it's going to take you, particularly in terms of family story and memory. If you sat down, as I said, with cookbooks or photo albums or even with siblings or older relatives, you just don't know until you get started where that's going to take you.
Now, when someone completes this, goes through those four Wednesdays, what are they going to have? Some family stories, or are they just going to have a springboard to continue writing them?
That's a great question. My goal is that by the third session, they'll have narrowed down to one or two family stories that they want to tell and craft. Then the final session would be the participants sharing that final story. So everyone reading it to the rest of us, and then myself making suggestions for how to continue.
Cool. Sounds like a wonderful thing to do, even, you know, not during a pandemic.
Right.
You know, when we're busy. I've always heard that busy people are the ones who really have time to do other things. I think the quote was in a journal that I made years ago, from a human standpoint, it's the full container that always has room for more.
That's great.
Give us an idea of what a good short family story sounds like.
Sure. I'm going to read just a section from a column I did called Goodbye 617 Harding Street, where my family grew up. The eight of us kids shared toys and bikes and lumpy beds, sometimes three at a time. We shared one three-channel rabbit-eared TV in the living room, which Mom called the front room, and one black rotary-dialed telephone. Though we spanned 19 years, we all learned to read from the same first grade teacher at Holy Ghost Grade School, Mrs. Florence Krummenauer, and at McDonald High School, we all learned to type from Sister Paul Marie. We were constantly called by each other's names at home and school. We wore each other's clothes and shoes, ate off of one another's plates, said mean or funny or kind words to one another. We helped each other with homework and outfits, with breakups and the death of our parents, all at 617 Harding Street. After Dad died last spring, we cleaned out the house. Each of us took our own 11 by 14 framed First Communion picture, a little like breaking up the band. This set of eight adorned the front room wall for years, a focal point that visitors were drawn to and regulars expected. We six girls looked downright angelic in the same lacy dress and veil. Two boys wore sport coats with rosary-draped hands. That day dividing treasures, all of us, now ages 51 to 70, posed in front of the bare wall and held up these ghost portraits, Catholic school style before and after, as if we reached back through time to reclaim our second grade selves.
You know, I'm really glad you read that, because I have a feeling the result of our conversation was people were thinking that this is going to teach them how, or that by learning how, they have to write their whole family story. But you can do it succinctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it can be a series of stories that people will walk away with and cherish. I couldn't help but to think of grandkids and great-grandkids who are going to have the luxury of being able to read that kind of stuff in the future. Good for you. Patty, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. Keep up all the great work. Keep in touch. And don't make me live up to what I said, okay?
I will not. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You can get details and register online for Preserving Family Stories at uwec.ly/CCA or call 715-836-3636. Tim Harmston, whose job is to be funny, and his special form of unemployment coming up on Spectrum West. Pam Gardo has been working with the Chippewa Valley Book Festival for 18 glorious years as one of the pioneers. She's been on the front lines of fighting to give it a reputation worthy of respect and participation by some of America's foremost authors. The festival has instituted important initiatives designed to broaden the scope of who participates, but also the basic fact of who reads. The Authors in the Schools program brought books and words to life, and Pam, a retired Eau Claire Memorial librarian, saw the benefits, and helped take it to another step. I reached her by phone during the noon hour earlier this week.
Yeah, I was involved in starting a regular Authors in the Schools program where we would bring probably 10 or 11 authors, each of whom would do three different presentations all over the Chippewa Valley in area schools.
Yeah. It's sometimes tough to get some kids to read. If it hadn't been assigned to me, I just didn't read very much.
Right.
Now I consume it. I love reading. I love the pastime.
Yeah.
Inviting an author, what a wonderful way to get kids to do it without saying, you have to do this.
Well, we've found there is nothing more motivating than hearing an author talk about a book and get inspired to read their books. And a lot of schools these days are going more and more to having kids read a book that they choose themselves. It's not always the entire class reading one book. A lot of times, kids are way more invested if they can pick a book that sounds good to them.
Yeah, why wouldn't have we thought of that years ago?
I know. Isn't that great?
I mean, how interesting to have every person report on a different book.
Or some other kind of activity. It's not just about book reports anymore either. They might do a blog post. They might start their own book group where each one talks about their particular book and inspires the rest of the group to want to read the books that they've read. There's lots of fun activities that can be done where each kid can apply the activity to the book that they've read.
You know, compared to what kids are able to do nowadays, I might as well have been riding a covered wagon.
I was riding a covered wagon in my day.
Yeah.
I'm a little older than most.
Oh, I am too, but that's cool. All right, so 18 years, you have 18 years in with the Chippewa Valley Book Festival. It's got to be tough for a person like you because many of the nice things about it had to do with the fact that it was experienced. It was in a groove. You knew what was happening and it was smooth.
You know, it's always been the purpose of the festival to connect wonderful books and authors with readers around the Chippewa Valley. But we've seen a huge uptick in the audience over the last several years, and we've gone wider afield to bring in renowned authors of fiction and nonfiction, even cookbook authors. You know, so we've varied the author content, and we've really developed a community of readers, I think,
cool,
that enjoy in-person events and the conversations that go with learning something new or experiencing a new author. And so it's been a vital thing for the community, I think.
Mm-hmm. It takes a while for something like a book festival or a jazz festival or anything like that to build a reputation.
Right, and find its footing and find its audience.
Yeah, and once you do, and a person like you who's been involved for 18 years must be a point of pride.
Oh, absolutely it is. And, you know, there's such enthusiasm with the people that organize the festival and the people that attend the festival. You know, word of mouth has been our biggest friend in terms of marketing.
You have some guest authors about to make some appearances in February and March, Britt Bennett and Brandon Taylor. Are those precursors to the book festival? Is the book festival going to happen virtually within the span of time? It has been happening in years past. Are there actual dates for the festival? Because if one goes to the website, you'll see exciting news coming soon. Stay tuned.
Yes, that's exactly it. Well, you know, we were all kind of devastated when we had to cancel last year's festival.
I'll bet.
And, you know, now in this time of COVID, whether it's concerts or family get-togethers or individual book clubs, everything is transitioning to online events. And so we decided to think, well, you know, we don't know when it's going to be safe to do another in-person festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought we'd experiment a little bit with the virtual platforms and see if we couldn't bring a wonderful author conversation and the ability of the audience to interact and ask questions of the author onto the virtual stage. And so we have got, as you said, phenomenal authors, both of whom have won awards, have been on the 2020 Best Books of the Year lists, and have a lot of critical acclaim. And so we're starting out right now with two events on a virtual platform, hoping by October of 2021, we may in fact be able to go back to at least some in-person events.
The February 12th appearance of Britt Bennett, what's the format of that going to be? People can participate how?
Well, Well, there will be registration involved, okay. And everyone who registers will get a link to the program. And so they'll just tune in on the night of the program and watch a conversation with Britt Bennett. She'll talk about her book, and people can ask questions. Although you don't have to have read it ahead of time, many people like to do that. And so Daughters Books will be selling her books and that of Brandon Taylor. An added incentive for purchasing them from Daughters is we will have signed autographed book plates from the authors to go with the books they buy. And they're wonderful books.
Let's just talk about Brit's. We have time to get to Brandon's on a later date.
Right. This story, which I have to say, started a bidding war on TV screening platforms.
And the book is called?
The Vanishing Half.
The Vanishing Half.
Starts in the 1950s in a little African-American community in Louisiana. There are identical, light-skinned twin sisters who run away to the city. Years later, one of the sisters vanishes and passes over beginning a new life as a white woman who marries and lives a life of white privilege. The other sister flees an abusive husband and returns home with her very dark-skinned little girl. Mm. And this is a story about community. It's a generational story of family bonds and identity and gender and the costs of secrets.
Mm. And I must say, very timely, race is on everybody's minds nowadays.
Well, it is. And the nice thing about this book is not just about race. It's about family dynamics and all kinds of other aspects that absolutely everyone will be able to recognize and identify with.
Yeah. Well, let's make a date for you and I to talk again before Brandon Taylor's appearance, maybe about the same time in February. Does that work for you?
That is perfect. And in the meantime, I hope everyone just finds an escape in reading, because this is the time when most people have a little bit more isolation time to get a good book and read.
And our fingers are crossed that we'll be able to connect with Britt Bennett and talk to her. I'm hoping the 4th of February show. As I alluded earlier, the website says exciting news coming soon. Stay tuned. We'll just try to sleep after reading that.
I'm always excited about books.
Well, the website is cvbookfest.org.
And this week we should have new information up on how to register for the Britt Bennett event.
Okay, that's all we need to know. Pam Gardo, thanks. Thanks for all your years of service to the Chippewa Valley Book Festival. You deserve to be proud.
Well, thank you. And we've enjoyed having Public Radio as a great partner with us to promote these events. So thank you, too.
Well, you're welcome. Go have lunch now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, stick around for a chat with comedian Tim Harmston on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, offering the mobile app that provides 24/7 access to view balances, pay bills, and more. Available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. More is at charterbank.bank. Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. I don't care how tough times get, there's always room for jocularity in the world, and one guy who always goes for the jocular vein is Tim Harmston, a favorite son of West Wisconsin, having grown into his funny self within the city limits of Menominee. His career has included albums, some big-time TV and comedy club appearances, lots of travel, and on occasion, the stand-up act unfurls with his wife Mary Mack next to him on stage. They also have made regular appearances on the Big River Radio Wave Show, as heard here on WPR. I thought a dose of Tim Harmston might be just what we need right about now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Harmston!
Hello. Thank you for coming out tonight. It's great to be back in my home state. My favorite memory of growing up in Wisconsin is that our health ed teacher weighed over 500 pounds. Here's how I'd like it to go down tonight. I'm gonna do some jokes, and then we're gonna take a brief pause so that I can do a timeshare condo sales presentation.
Well, I have to tell you, I was at the website, and the old tour dates section is a bit dusty there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of end in February of 2020. Go figure.
Yeah, you know, it was so disappointing to lose all my work. Comedy kind of hurts to even think about. So.
Boy, there's a strange statement. Comedy hurts.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about your latest album, but what other than album releases has the last 10 months been like for Tim the Comedian?
I would like to think, you know, that I would use this time off to write and work on the act. You know, like when the pandemic started, that was the intention, was to really use this time off to be as creative and productive as possible. And I'm not going to lie, the more anger built up about the way people were reacting to the pandemic and the politicizing of masks, it just became to where I didn't feel funny anymore after the first, you know, month or so of quarantine. And so I just made a personal decision to use this time to do other things that I had been wanting to do but weren't able to because I was traveling so much. So that means, you know, doing a lot of home repair and construction and watching shows that I didn't have time to watch and reading books that I didn't have time to read, stuff like that. And
cool.
I don't regret not focusing on comedy one bit. That's all I did for almost 20 years. And so to have time off to put my brain to work in something else was refreshing.
Now that I think of it, you do sound a lot more well-rounded.
Well, yeah, just like my beer gut's become more well-rounded, too.
You have a nice bit on that album about the beer gut. People will learn what a PFR is.
Should I tell them or should I make them buy the album?
Give them some hors d'oeuvres to make them want the album.
Well, the PFR is called a primary fat roll. The roll of fat on a beer gut that takes up the most amount of space. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, it's the primary fat roll. So okay. You'll be hearing about that on the album.
And there's other stuff, too, that we'll bring up a little later. But let's go back to the unfunny. You know, I had a question here on paper that says, how does a person like you, whose job it is to be funny, how do you digest the not funny? Is being funny your job?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the job is maybe an hour a week sometimes, 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week. When I'm busy at a comedy club, it's, you know, you have a set amount of shows, maybe 5 shows over the course of a weekend. Mm-hmm. So during those shows, yeah, if you are not funny, you don't work anymore. So that's my job. But people have an assumption that comics are funny offstage and all the time and wherever they are. And it really, if you had to use that much energy to, you wouldn't have any left for the stage. And I, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've worked with a lot of comedians, some of them very well known and some are lesser known. But the one thing I see is that there's an intensity leading up to your show that it has that, like, don't bother me vibe because I'm working on getting this thing right. And so people sometimes prior to the show are surprised when you're not jolly like Santa Claus, all smiles and whatever, because you're really intensely getting ready to unleash a burst of energy on stage. And so there's a misconception there.
I've seen that part of you, and I respect that.
Yeah, I mean, we've done enough radio shows and things like that, and I think it's for musicians too. I mean, I'm a big Rolling Stones fan. I had a laugh the other day. I just go deep into YouTube to watch Rolling Stone clips. There's a great video where they're at the Hampton Coliseum in 1980, getting ready to go onto stage, and Ronnie Wood, who I think is the coolest person in the world, somebody fills up his martini, and he's walking up the ramp onto stage, takes a swig, and then just sets it down like the coolest cat ever. And I'm like, the Stones are the only people that don't get, like, nervous before they perform. That's my theory. I think most of the comedians are nervous before you go on, no matter how good you are.
One more question about the downtime and the icky stuff out there. Being an observer, as most comedians are, is there always, though, a part of you, a percentage of you that is looking at this stuff and thinking about what you could do from a comedy standpoint after it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, I said that I was focusing on other things, but I still have my phone and I still write notes in the joke file if I have an observation. And my wife and I have both, she's a comedian, and we've both said to each other many times during the pandemic, hey, do you think this is funny? Or, you know, should I write this down? Or we've come up with some thoughts that we'll do when it's time to get back on stage. But for the most part, the one thing that I've been struggling with the most is how we come out of the pandemic, we're more divided than ever. And I mean, this country is split, not quite down the middle. So if you're up there talking about pandemic jokes, you're like, well, some people believe in this and some people don't believe in this. It'll be fascinating to see how comics will navigate the divided, polarized audience that they might be performing in front of. And I've been thinking about that a lot.
We're on the phone with Tim Harmston, comedian, and we're talking about things funny and unfunny. But now let's get back to that album, because The Whim of Tim is circulating out there. You haven't been able to perform for obvious reasons, but we can get a taste of Tim Harmston anytime by just popping this baby in. And I bought it over the weekend and have played it ever since. It's good on you to get that thing out there when you did.
Yeah, we just got it out right as the pandemic started. And I did have quite a few people comment on social media, thanks for the laughs, I needed that. Or, you know, even if it brought a chuckle to somebody who was having a rough day or a tough time dealing with this, it's sort of satisfying. And I have already kind of have the next album ready to go, but I'm afraid I'll be so rusty. Like, my comedy instincts will need to be polished for another 6 months once we can get back on and get vaccinated. And, you know, comedy has been happening. It's been online, on Zoom. There have been open mics, outdoor shows, you know, things under tents. My wife and I are at an age we're just not risking this. We're just not going to perform in front of people. And I am a little bit rusty, and I'm sure it'll take a while to knock it off. But I do think when this is over, comedy will be in high demand. People are very tense right now. And I do think that when people see, you know, an ad for a comedy show, that's going to be very appealing to many people.
And I'm going to be one of those people in the audience, too, because there's nothing that can replace a live comedy show. But I have become more appreciative of comedy without an audience. And the biggest example is Stephen Colbert. In his monologues, I find myself bursting out laughing more so than I did when he was walking out in front of the audience.
Yeah, there's another dimension to it, and it's almost unexplainable what it is. It's almost like you can see through his eyes that he's uncomfortable, but he doesn't care, and so therefore you don't care, and then it's funny. And I have a lot of respect for all the late night folks that have been doing that night after night after night.
So back to the album, one will find the word explicit tacked on to some various locations. on the album. And here's a question for you. Of the of the following synonyms for the word explicit, relative to your album, which of these synonyms is the most explicit? Okay?
Yes.
Here they come. Unambiguous, categorical, frank, raw, or
I'm going to say frank. I'm going to say there's some frank discussion. And even raw, frank with a side of raw.
I put a lot of work into
that. Yeah. My mom would have preferred there was more of that on the album.
Okay.
But I think I let go a few swear words. I'm not going to lie. And that's not typically my style. But, when in Eau Claire and on stage with a few beers, I think a few swears are going to come out. I think we can all agree that's going to happen. And that's all been a part of, this last 10 months has just been slowly seeing places that were so vibrant and important to the entertainment culture and just sitting there dormant. Some places are struggling to survive, and just to be a part of that for so many years and then just see it affect so many people, you know, the bartenders and the servers and the people that you know in this business just not being able to put food on their table. It's very upsetting, and the more of that I have inside of me, the more I want to lash out on stage at people that don't believe in the pandemic. Yeah, it can be upsetting. there's people that definitely believe in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, who did the sketch on the album? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's Michael Callahan, a really good friend and magician out of St. Peter, Minnesota, who's a very talented performer and a great illustrator. And he draws barns. And I said, I know you do barns, but would you ever do my face? He whipped it up, and I love it.
I didn't know you got your beginning at the Mall of America. That's a cool, I mean, that's cooler than heck to be able to say that's where you got your start doing comedy.
The Mall of America, it says in my bio, it's the largest mall in the Midwest.
It used to be in the world, didn't it?
Yeah, that's a dumb joke. I try to tell and nobody understands. No, it's probably on me. That one's on me.
Yeah, good. The album, folks, just as more tidbits so that you can't resist going out and getting it. You'll learn where almond and soy milk come from by listening to this. And I like the reference to the designated anger zones.
Yeah, I think that's a joke for couples.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about having a special place in the house to go when you get angry.
Yep.
And I think we all have one of those.
One final question. I can't let you go without finding out how Connie Dugan is doing. There's got to be less hockey and, you know, the kids are virtually schooling and that kind of stuff. How's Connie?
Connie's great, and I wish Connie could make a comeback. I wanted her to run for school board. But she's healthy and happy and rooting on her kids playing hockey.
Just the fact of being Connie has got to be good for you.
And for those of you who don't know, we should probably tell them if they don't know who Connie Dugan is.
Yeah, sure.
It's a character I came up with and do in a YouTube series. I did it many years ago.
Yeah.
But it's about a mom who takes hockey very seriously, based on a real mom's from my growing up in western Wisconsin, and also hockey moms that I would meet. In comedy starting off, I'd do a lot of one-nighters up in the Dakotas and Bemidji and the Iron Range. And at every hotel, I would be like, oh, what a long drive. I can't wait to get a good night's sleep. And then the hockey crew would come in, the parents with these giant coolers, and they bring them in and the party starts. And the kids are running down the hallways, and you never get a good night's sleep. And it always seemed to happen in northern Minnesota when I was touring. And so I kind of wrote a sketch about one of the hockey moms. And then I eventually put myself in drag, filmed them. I got a great response.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to sell it over the years as a TV show. I just don't know if it was too regional or people didn't quite understand the humor. But I was never able to sell it. But now there's a thing called Patreon. You know, it's like a self-crowdsourced funded thing. And people have suggested I do Patreon to kind of revive the series. It might be a thing I do.
The cuts that I watched, I mean, your face, you were a happy person.
Wow, thanks for saying that. Yeah.
I want you to be healthy. And even if Connie doesn't come back, I'd put her stuff on if I were you every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, just go for a stroll down to the dollar store and put on the gear.
There you go.
Or go to some hockey games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's my advice.
Maybe there's a part for you. Maybe you'd like to be the hockey grandpa.
Sure. I'd be anything if it involves Connie.
Okay.
And she gets to sit on my knee at least once. Well, folks, laughter is sustenance. And let's all thank Tim Harmston for working at that important food bank that hands out the laughter. Tim, always a pleasure. I hope to see you in person one of these days.
One more for the road. Hey, Al, you are a crazy son of a...
I like it. Take care.
Have a good one, Al. Thanks.
I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to live, but my wife and I had to have that talk. You know, you got to tell each other what you want to do if you die. You know, it's difficult, and my brain starts to spin. I overthink it, and I know I want to have my ashes sprinkled in the Namekagon River in northern Wisconsin, but then I thought, you know, God, there's a lot of carp in that river. And like, what if a carp like sucked up all my ashes and then I'm in a fish? And then like, what if that carp washes ashore and gets eaten by a bear? And then that bear like wanders off and attacks a Boy Scout camp, and the the DNR has to tranquilize that bear and send it to Washington, D.C. for laboratory analysis. And then when they're done with it, they put it on one of those garbage barges out in the Atlantic Ocean, and they just sort of kick it overboard, and it just starts floating like down along the eastern seaboard, gets into one of those Gulf Streams, it goes down around the tip of South Africa and up into the Indian Ocean, and then it just sort of like gently comes to rest at the bottom of the seafloor next to Osama bin Laden. Now that's a worst case scenario. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.
See, I told you. We all needed a little bit of that. Got some memos for you here. The 2021 Western Wisconsin Spring Garden Seminar consists of Saturday virtual presentations in February and March. You can register online at EauClaireAreaMasterGardener.org, and we'll have a guest with more on that on our show on the 4th of February, and the repeat, of course, is Friday the 5th. Also remember the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra book and CD set, Carnival of the Animals, available at various locations, including some music stores, the local store, and the Echo website. That's going to wrap it up for this week. We're taking some time off next week, but February is filling up with an all-star guest list, like, we've confirmed it, author Britt Bennett, coming for those special virtual presentations with the Chippewa Valley Book Festival, Them Cooley Boys, and all about a spring garden seminar that I just told you about. That's on the next show, February 4th, and there's more. For now, thanks to Kate, Dean, Catherine, and of course to you guys. Visit us at WPR.org to find all the Spectrum West programs neatly archived. Hey, wear a mask, keep your eyes on the road, get out there and make a positive difference. See you in a couple weeks.